Welcome to the Judo Podcast for September 6th, 2006, The Squeaky Hip. Welcome back to the Judo Podcast. I'm Mike Darter, calling today from Athens, Greece, after a very long flight. We'll see if I can make it through this one. I'm here with Gene Shin from Charlottesville, Virginia. And also we have a special guest. Today we have Neil Olenkamp with Encino Judo in California. He is the owner of judoinfo.com. And also the author of a new book that we'll be talking about, Judo Unleashed. Neil, I really appreciate you meeting with us here. I got your book in about a week ago, and it looks great. And I have to say, the photos look great. In fact, there's some photos in there, one in particular that I remember of some feet. It looked like that maybe it was the lens was open for a while, and it shows some feet moving.
Yeah.
Awesome, yeah. Photos. In fact, some of those I would love to be able to maybe talk to you about using in some graphics in the future. But if you haven't seen this book or if you haven't heard about it, definitely go to his website and check it out. It's a great book.
Neil, why don't you talk a little bit about your book and tell us what's the main focus of this particular book?
Well, the audience for this book is students of judo up to from about 1 year up to 6-7 years, that period of time. So it doesn't include some of the most basic things like falling techniques, which are of course hard to learn from a book anyways. And it does include, however, all of the techniques of judo. And so it's intended to cover up to the black belt or rank or so, something like that. So it's for the majority of students in judo. And it's not really intended for kids, more for adults, but it's very simple language that's very clear and easy to read. So it can be, it can be used easily by kids, and it relies to a great extent on photos. It has hundreds of full-color photos, so kids can use the book very easily as well as a reference, and that's what most judo books are used for, as just a reference anyways. So it's intended for the typical judo student, sort of an update to the older books that we had, like Hal Sharp's The Techniques of Judo and Judo in Action and books like that that aren't available anymore, and of course had lower quality black and white photos. Mm-hmm. This book was a little bit revolutionary for judo books because of the color photos. I don't think there's any other one that has that kind of quality photos, and yet other martial arts books do. It's still kind of rare in other martial arts too, but you know, publishers starting to move towards that direction, and so it was good to be one of the first ones.
Were you the photographer yourself?
No, the publisher arranged a professional photographer in South Africa that they'd used on previous books, and he does some really nice work, and he had actually done a previous beginner's book also on judo, and so I knew the kind of work that he could do, and so they flew me to South Africa for the photo shoots and spent a week there doing all those photos.
And why in South Africa?
The publisher that did this is a British publisher, and they have an office in South Africa and Australia, and their South Africa office was the one that had this project, so that's where the publisher was, and they wanted to use their own photographer.
Oh, I see.
Now you have
a judo which was a,
it was lucky for me. It was great. And, yeah.
So how was the judo there? Did you have time to... Really?
I did. I met the president of Judo South Africa and went to class with the national coach and taught a little bit there. And all of the other judoka in the photos are South African judoka. And so I worked with them, and there were some very skilled people there. It was good. It's it seems kind of similar to judo in the U.S. to me, you know, because they were teaching mainly at recreation centers and at a university and places like that. It was all non-profit kind of stuff, and the coaches were had similar programs to what we do here, I think.
Now, some of the pictures, and I've seen some before, like the beach pictures. Were those there too, or were those done by you previously?
No, those were done there too. You know, they were open to suggestions about what to do, and so I suggested some of the photos, and one of them was going to the beach for a day and doing some shots, and they tried to get some sunsets in and some, you know, waves in the background and stuff, and yeah, it was good.
It was cool. Now, I thought I'd seen some of those before your book, or had I not? Had you done some of those before?
No, but I had a few of them that I took also while I was there that I put on my website to give an idea of what was coming.
Okay.
So, yeah, my wife came along for the trip, and we went on a safari and did some other things afterwards since we were in Africa. And so she took some photos that came out pretty good, too.
Well, I enjoyed it. I got it, and one of the things I liked about it was the photos and the... in the techniques, the actual photos instead of the illustrations and the color. That was a big difference, too.
It makes it much more clear than the older books where you can't tell whose hand is which one, you know, and that kind of thing. We also did it with one blue gi and one white gi, so Tori was always in a white gi and Uke was always in a blue gi, so you could follow it along pretty easily. It was,
you know, that's interesting. That's something that I've been noticing in a lot of drawings and diagrams where that convention has been adopted. Tori is in white and Uke is in blue. Is that? Do you know if that's? How did that come about? You know, is that just something people just tend to be doing, or did you, you know, think about, you know, what would it be if Tori were in blue and Uke were in white? It's kind of a minor point, but it struck me the other day when I was looking at some pictures.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a convention or not. Of course, I had to decide what to do when I got there, as far as that, and that was my preference. I don't know why. I guess just because the blue gi is the traditional gi.
So you mean the white gi is a traditional gi?
I mean the white gi, yeah. And we also did some photos where both partners were in white. Those were like the ones on the beach and, you know, some of the more artistic photos. We used both partners in white.
Uh-huh.
But for illustrating the throws, we went with the white as Tori.
Was the guy who was wearing the white gi, was he, you know, any better at judo? Was he a higher rank or anything? Or just, did you like his technique more? You just said, okay, you're in white, you'll do the throws.
I tried to, of course, fit the throws with what the people could do the best. But I also tried to mix it up a bit so that, you know, one of the good things I think about this book, too, as far as being a modern, updated book, is that there's women in the book doing judo and as well as guys. And so I tried to mix it up with some of the smaller people and the taller people, you know, to show how certain throws could be done against much bigger people. There's a really beautiful throw of one of the women there who's about 5'1", throwing a guy who's about 6'1", with a beautiful serenage, and she just comes up off the ground to get the throw done. And so I tried to mix it up that way, too, you know, to show women with men and women with women and men with women, so get more variety into the book. So also I tried to get the skills right, you know, make sure that I showed the right things and that they were doing it properly, but I also tried to mix it up.
So
yeah.
How about just a quick background on you?
I started in 1968, and within a year or two, I found my sensei that I stayed with until now. He's retired, but I've been fortunate to have one primary sensei. Of course, I also worked with many other people. I grew up in the Los Angeles area and trained there, and there were lots of opportunities, different clubs and different sensei that helped me a lot. So I was able to, you know, travel around just about every night of the week to visit and train with other clubs.
And And what's that sensei's name that you stuck with all these years?
My sensei is Jürgen Wall, and he founded the Encino Judo Club at a community center in Encino, which is part of Los Angeles. And so I started there as a kid and worked my way up through black belt with competition. You know, we had about two competitions a month in the Nanka Yudanshikai in Southern California. And I started teaching then at Shodan, but also kept competing for until I earned my Nidan, and a while after that. I started also teaching my own class and kind of expanding the Encino Judo Club at another location. And we started teaching also at the Braille Institute, where we have blind students. And so we started a relationship there with the Braille Institute, and one of my students eventually took over that class and kept it going for the last 20 years or so. And through that, we got involved with the United States Association for Blind Athletes, where they had just started a judo program. And so I became a national coach of the blind judo team, and some of our students were on the team because we had really the only blind class for judo in the country, although there were other people doing judo in regular classes, and we found those people, and I tried to identify them and tried to get more people into classes and tried to promote the program and brought them to training camps and that kind of stuff. And eventually I coached the Paralympic team in Seoul, Korea, where we won two bronze medals. And then 2 years later, one of the students from Braille won the world championships in the Netherlands for blind students. And he now is teaching the class at Braille. And he's also an actor and a poet and very successful guy. So that got me involved in coaching at an international level and involved in some of the administration and politics of judo for the blind anyway, in the international level. And then I stopped doing that because it was just taking all of my time. And then shortly after that, I started the judo information site. And I guess we'll talk more about that later. And I kept teaching the whole time. My club's expanded. I now have classes in five locations with some of my students teaching some of those classes. And I'm now a sixth-degree black belt. And so I'm still involved in promoting judo. And, of course, writing the book was the latest thing I've worked on.
That's interesting that you... I didn't know that about you with the Paralympics, but we actually have a podcast scheduled, and we may get back with you again in the future, because we're doing Adam Blackburn. I don't know if you know him, in Salt Lake City with USA Stars. Judo just started a blind program there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the program's come a long way since when I started. When I first started it, there was no program, and there was no exposure for these blind athletes, and they couldn't get the publicity or the funds, they had to raise their own money and all that kind of stuff. It was very difficult, and we got no support from any of the judo organizations, like USJI pretty much, turned the other way, and until the U.S. Olympic Committee started requiring that, the NGBs get involved with these programs. USJA kind of welcomed us, and we used Camp Bushido as one of our training camps and that kind of stuff. But we had no official support, and U.S. Association for Blind Athletes had no monetary support for the program. So once we won the world championship and, we publicized that as much as we could and, got the word around, the program started growing and people became interested. It's really an ideal sport for blind people.
Yeah, how many contact sports can visually impaired people participate in with any safety?
Yeah, it's really.
And it would be hard and possible to do something like boxing or karate or anything like that. know, but judo is, or perhaps wrestling perhaps would be...
Well, and at Braille we teach kids as well as adults, and, you know, most of them are not, you know, interested in the Paralympics or competition, just like with, you know, most judo classes. And but each person, you know, gets a chance to learn and do something that they never, you know, would have thought they could do, and it's really, really good for them, as it is for everybody, of course.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I'm really looking forward to this next podcast that we do on the blind, and, you know, it's something I've started a dojo here in Charlottesville, and it's a population that, you know, hadn't even occurred to me to look into working with. I recently did a clinic with a burn camp, and that was interesting because here you had kids who were burned over, you know, terribly burned over large percentages of their bodies, and it was an amazing thing to see how well they responded to just being able to, you know, to touch one another and to find that here was an activity where people weren't afraid to get physically close and to work with one another. And I imagine that you have similar experiences with working with the blind.
Oh, yeah, just starting with the falling, of course, you know, to teach someone to roll over or lose contact with the ground, you know, when you can't see. It's all these things are big steps for them.
Yeah. So, I was wondering if I could ask a question about the book again. The title, the Judo Unleashed, I was noticing that you've got actually editions in several different countries, the U.S., the U.K., and Germany, and they each have different titles. Where did the title Judo Unleashed, was it leashed before? What does that mean?
Yeah. Actually, the publisher that I worked with was New Holland Publishers, which are the, as I mentioned, the British publisher. It's a big international company, but they published it under the title Black Belt Judo Skills and Techniques, and I had input into that title, but that was their final title. They sold the North American rights to McGraw-Hill, which is the biggest publisher in the U.S., and they decided on the title. So I had no contact with McGraw-Hill, and so the whole cover design, the front and back cover, the paperback, you know, version of it, they decided that on their own. They had previously published a book called Jiu-Jitsu Unleashed, and so I think that was part of the idea, too. I think they've also since then published a book called Muay Thai Unleashed, and so I think
they're going for name recognition.
I think they're going with a sort of a series, right? And so I think that was part of their idea, and this just fit into that.
That's, you know, I think that's a little unfortunate because, you know, people tend to, who aren't involved with martial arts, tend to lump them all together, you know, in some sort of, you know, vague understanding that martial arts are this other kind of discipline, and they don't really take much time to distinguish between them. I'm forever explaining the difference between judo and karate, and you'd think that, you know, after they've been around for as long as they've been around, you know, you wouldn't have to... It's like explaining the difference between football and baseball. So that's too bad that they're kind of doing that kind of thing. But it's interesting to hear the story that, you know, that you had sort of... you had this involvement with the content of the book, but some of the packaging of it was really beyond your control.
I didn't get a final review of the book. There were some errors in the book that I hadn't had an opportunity to correct because no one ever showed them to me, so, you know, the final layout and stuff.
What would be an example of one of those errors?
Well, for example, in the...
you can let people know and say, this wasn't your fault.
Each technique has with it some drawings of the basic foot position for it. And the tori is differentiated from the uki by color, so there's a blue feet and there's gray feet. And when I reviewed it, I reviewed a black and white copy of those drawings because they would fax them to me. And then I couldn't tell which ones were blue and which ones were black, you know. So when the final version came out, there's two pages where they're reversed. And so clearly they're not the right people doing the right thing, you know. So there's that kind of error. They have published, they are doing a reprint now, though. They've the McGraw-Hill has already ordered a second edition. And so I had an opportunity to correct those kind of errors for the second edition. So I'm hopeful that they'll be fixed in the next edition.
So you haven't actually seen the second edition yet?
No, it hasn't been printed yet, but it's in the works.
Okay.
So we are working on it, and I since have found, you know, the U.S. publisher. Now I have a contact there and that kind of stuff. But when the book first came out, nobody told me it came out. I discovered it on Amazon.com, and it was there. So we lost the communication there for a while. On the other hand, the advantage of this is that they get it into the bookstores. And
right.
So, you know, if I go to Barnes & Noble or Borders or something, my book is there,
right.
And several copies of it. And often there's no other judo books there except maybe Kodokan Judo or something.
Right.
And so that's also, you know, to me that was important. Because when you go to a bookstore and you look on the martial arts shelf, you see, you know, dozens of martial arts books. And if there is a judo book, it always looks kind of old, and you know,
yeah.
It's a 50s book, and it doesn't compare with the more modern books. And
that's
so
true.
This one, you know, finally does. I think it represents judo better, and is better for the average person who just wants to know what it is, or maybe does some other martial art and wants to know something about judo. And so it opens up the market to that kind of person, I think.
Have you thought about looking into some of the electronic publishing and making it available digitally?
Well,
or is that just the publisher's point? That's just
right,
the publisher's point at this point.
Yeah, I can't do that. That's you know, they own all that kind of rights and stuff. But maybe for a subsequent book, yeah. Yeah.
Format.
Yeah, that would be great. Of course,
so,
this involved quite an investment in terms of the photographer and the photos and the you know, just the layout and stuff. I was surprised when they Amazon.com sells the paperback version for $12.97 or something like that.
Right.
And that's an amazing price for the, you know, the photos and the quality of the paper and all that stuff.
Right. Well, let's get into kind of judoinfo.com.
Well, I started that because in 1995 is when I started it. And, you know, the Internet was pretty young at that time, but already it was open to everybody, and anybody could put up a website, and companies were doing it like crazy. And when I would do searches for judo, you know, there'd only be a couple that would come up, and small clubs websites and that kind of thing. But when I did a search for something like, say, wrestling, you know, you'd get you know, national organizations would come up, and you know, there was you know, much more available. And I didn't think that was right, and so I started putting things online. And I had always used a computer to keep notes and handouts for my students and, you know, things like that. Since actually one time I used to keep it all in a notebook from when I was young, of course, and it got stolen out of my car. And so that taught me to make backups, you know, and to put them on. Put them on the computer and stuff. So I, you know, redid everything and put it on. And so I had some material, actually, that I could share. And it was stuff that I had worked on to make handouts and things that I thought might benefit other instructors who had to do the same things. And at that time, there was no program to help new instructors. There was no, you know, USJF or USJA, or, you know, nobody had a program or a binder that they could send you that would have things that you could actually use. So I started putting my own things online and sharing it, thinking it might help some other people. And, of course, it did. I got good feedback, and I started expanding it. And then some people started sending me some things that they thought were helpful, and we started adding those on. And then I started consolidating some of the information that was available on the Internet and putting it into one place and putting links to other sites and things like that. And pretty quickly it became the most popular site because I was giving stuff out for free when most of the Internet was more like publicity or promotion. And so small club websites would promote their club but not really say much about judo, you know. And so I you know, made these animations and drawings that one of the senseis in my club was a graphic artist, and he created some drawings that we put on online of all the techniques, and that quickly drew a lot of people because other martial arts didn't do that, you know, they didn't share what their techniques were. So it grew real quickly, and, you know, still several years later, USJF and USJA and USJI still didn't have websites, and they weren't sure how to do that, you know, and I was, you know, trying to make it, you know, obvious, and neither did IJF or not, or the Kodokan. They all came quite a bit later, and I was trying to, you know, promote the internet as a way to give information out about judo and get people interested in it, and, you know, it's been a huge success in that sense. People are constantly writing me, telling me how they, you know, have been reading about judo on my site, and then they started judo, and now it's been there long enough that many of these people are now black belts who started judo because they read the information on my site.
Wow. That's awesome. Did you ever think you'd be getting up into the millions of hits that you've...
I knew the internet would grow, but to tell you the truth, I thought somebody would come along that actually had some money that would do a much better job, and you know, some professionals, because I really know nothing about the internet, and everything I know I've learned myself. And when I, you know, when the internet first started, making web pages was a lot easier than it is now. And there's so much more technology and possibilities that you can do now that it's much more complicated. And I thought that someone like, for example, USJI would produce a professional website that would have all this information that would take over. In fact, I offered to give my website to them and make it into a USJI website, but you know, they weren't interested. And same thing with IJF and the Kodokan. They could easily have created a website that would have superseded mine, and it hasn't happened yet, you know, so...
No, it hasn't.
I just keep on going, because, you know, but it's kind of as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of a sad state of affairs when one guy, part-time, can put enough stuff on to be the leading website for judo, as opposed to, for example, the IJF, where they've got a whole company helping them run their website.
Well, that's one thing I was going to say. You know, you said that you weren't that, or you didn't know a lot about web development or whatever. You actually have a good site as far as a layout. It's easy to get around. It's always looked good, and I've been on it probably around 96 to 98, somewhere around there. So it's probably after you first started. But it's a great site. And while we're on this topic, I would like to kind of take a minute and just say, you know, to the people out there that you've done an amazing job with the site. And a site, when you start getting as many hits as you start getting, you start looking at bandwidth. There's some big cost in it. And what you have compiled now, I mean, there's got to be some pretty big costs with that. And I would just encourage everybody who uses that site to, even if it's a one-time, you know, one-time donation, if you use a site, and I have a lot of, I mean, new students come in all the time, and they're like, what can I do to help my judo, you know, at home, or, you know, on my own time, whatever. And usually the first thing I tell them is, you can go to the judoinfo.com. I mean, everything you'll ever need to know about throws, you know, is there. So I would definitely encourage people to, you know, support your site the best they can, because, you know, just imagine if that was gone. I mean, if your site, if you had to say, you know what, I can't handle the bandwidth anymore, I got to pack it up, we're done. If you had to do that, I mean, you have worldwide, I mean, you have, it's a global site. Anybody can go pull up any throw, they can look at any video of the throw, they can look at tournament videos of the throws for free. So, I mean, you know, I would strongly urge anybody out there, if they can, to do whatever they can to support your site.
I had to go with a dedicated server because of the bandwidth limits on everything else. So I do have my own server now for the site and for all the traffic on the judo forum and stuff too.
But you still charge bandwidth through your ISP, right? Your internet service provider.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a cap, and if you go over that cap...
I have a pretty high limit, yeah, but I have to pay for it, you're right. And fortunately, we have a couple of sponsors, and, you know, from, like, Hatashita was the first sponsor, and they've been helping out since, you know, for, like, 7 years now, and a few others, and you know, we of course, would accept other sponsors that are judo-related. I'm not really interested in advertising on the site and you know, in random advertising, but if there's judo sponsors that want to help out, of course, that's available, and there's a little bit of income from people who purchase books through Amazon by clicking on links from my site and that kind of stuff. That helps out. But mostly it's, most of it is me.
Well, you know, and your time, most of all. I mean, I can't imagine how much time you put into your site. I mean, I put a lot of time into ours, but your site's been there for so long that, I mean, you can't put a price on that. And, you know,
and I do updates every month, so I'm always looking for new material and stuff, so I'm doing a lot of things that don't even show up, you know, right away, because I have to do a lot of reading, watching videos, and you know, checking things out, and communicating with other people who might be contributors and that kind of stuff. And then, of course, the judo forum takes a huge amount of time to administer that because of the number of people that are participating in that. And
do you know how many members you have in that?
Well, we have 2,835 registered members right now, and we've had as many as yesterday we had 730 people online at the same time participating in the forum.
Wow.
And you know, that's been a huge thing too since I started that, because you know, one of the problems with judo, at least while I was growing up in judo, was that we all thought we were the only ones doing it. And, you know, we'd go to our club and there'd be, you know, a bunch of people, but nobody else, like I said, you said, you know, nobody's ever heard of what it is. And we were always separated, you know, by our club and other clubs. We never got together except at tournaments where we just competed against each other and never really got to talk or get to know each other. And the judo forum kind of brings people together, and not just in clubs, but in states and in countries and in generations. You know, there's people from, you know, in their 70s who don't compete or aren't even involved in judo anymore but love it. And there's parents of kids involved in judo who are on the forum, and just fans of judo. And we're creating a whole community there where, you know, people realize they're not the only ones, you know, who love it and who have the same feelings about it. And, you know, we have people that see it as a sport and people that see it as a martial art, and somehow, you know, they have to get along on the forum and share their feelings. And I think that's been a huge thing in terms of bringing people together, and that's why we have so many members and why so many people are online at the same time on the forum. And lately it's been causing some problems on my server. I might have to upgrade my server and get a more powerful one, because just handling that many people on the forum, you know, at one time, the database is stretched pretty far.
Right.
Anyway, that's been a huge thing, too, I think, in addition to the information. And so that's been a drain on my time, too, trying to monitor that and keep it civil and, you know, doing the things that a moderator has to do on the forum. You know, people can learn a lot just from reading the forum. And even there, you see many people tell us that, you know, they started judo because they found out it was so interesting and from the forum. And they get on and they post it with their experience in their first class, and then their experience at their first promotion, and their experience at their first tournament, and you know, all of this. While there's also discussion among high dons discussing the philosophy or the theory of judo. You know, it's got the whole range of things in there. When I first started, I was keeping track of competition results, and that was a big innovation, you know, just making available who won the world championships or who won.
You know, that's still a big innovation. You know, out here on the East Coast, it's very hard sometimes to get local tournaments to put their, you know, to put their results up on the web,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Or just to keep competition records computerized, that kind of thing. You know,
right.
It's amazing
and
how it's still filtering down.
It's still a big need, and I tried to do it myself, and it was finally, you know, another website, I think it's Ippon, Judo Ippon or something, ipponjudo.org or something, you know, started publishing them. They do a better job, so I stopped doing it. And I'd love to see other people do things like that, because I can't do everything, and I want other sites to have specials. You know, it's like this iPod thing. I think it's great, you know. I can't do that, but it's a great thing for judo is to...
Well, we're glad you can't do it, so we can do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had to...
I mean, we got to get more people doing this stuff.
yeah, that's true.
You remember me asking you, I don't know if you remember, but like a year ago, I actually talked to you, Neil, about doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And I actually talked to USJ and you because...
That's great.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Mike, you know, hearing your story in, you know, the story that you just related, I guess I should say our story, but, you know, really more you, and then in contrast or in comparison with Neil, your story, it's interesting how they're very similar. I mean, here you have two guys who, you know, love judo and wanted to do something for it and saw a need and, you know, didn't have any specific special training. In fact, you said you didn't really know much about the internet or, you know, not a very technical guy, and yet,
I bought a book.
You know, just here you go, you know, this is how it works. And that seems to me to be that's very appropriate, particularly for the subject area that we're talking about. I mean, judo should be something that people develop and grow, you know, all over the place. It should remain, I think, a very grassroots kind of activity and movement so that, you know, it doesn't get rarefied and difficult to access for, you know, for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And there's plenty of opportunity still for more innovative ideas and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's fine for people to step up and do this stuff, and that's, you know, one of the great things about the internet is you have the opportunity to do that, whereas in real life, you know, it's a lot harder.
Yeah. I actually had another question that gets more specifically to something on your website. Is that okay, Mike?
Yeah, that's fine. Good.
I was looking at some of the videos that you've got, particularly of the kata demonstrations and this kind of thing, or you know, you've got videos of all these throws. Can you talk a little bit about that? Who are these people, and how did you get their videos? Did you film these? Did you do these videos yourself? You know, how did that all come about?
Most of that stuff are links to videos that were provided by others. And so that's one of those compilation pages where all I did was organize it and put it together and put the right names on them and stuff like that.
So these aren't people from your dojo at all?
No, most of them are not. Most of them are from other dojos all over the world. And competition videos are other ones that people provided to me or that were available some other way. So most of that I didn't actually film myself.
Uh-huh.
I just made it available to people.
Oh, okay.
It was already there.
You know, back when we were talking about the book, I was wondering, is there any particular part of the book that, Neil, that you thought was particularly successful, that you're particularly proud of, that you thought came out really well?
Mainly, the thing I like is the basic layout. And, you know, when I wrote it, I did, you know, things that I thought would make the book look more interesting, like little charts, you know, and little text inserts and things like top tips for randori, where I put a list of things, you know, to you know, try to do in randori, and you know, little, and the diagrams of the foot positions for the different methods of pivoting in for throws, and you know, that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I don't think there's a single page in here that doesn't have some photo or picture or graphic on it, you know. And so the basic design is what I thought was most successful and innovative for a judo book. You know, of course, it had to have good content, and I think, you know, I hope it's all accurate, although I'm still getting feedback from people about, you know, little things and stuff that I can maybe improve if I ever did it again. I mean, it's not perfect, for sure. But I think the basics are there, and the content is there, and the quality of the techniques that are demonstrated in the photos. Even there's some things that I would do differently, you know, and I could make them better next time, and make them, you know, improve on those things too. But you know, basically, I think the design is what sells that book, and is what makes people think judo is cool, you know, and what people from other martial arts are going to pick it up and read it. And, you know, I think that kind of book is going to get more people interested in judo, and, you know, than any other kind of book. So So I got to give credit to the designer who did the layout, basically, because I think that's what makes this book, what it is.
We never did talk about how the actual book project came about. Were you approached by a publisher, or did you approach a publisher, or how did that happen?
Yeah, actually, because of my website, I get contacted by all kinds of people. I get calls when I'm on vacation from reporters who want to know something, and, all kinds of stuff. And so this one, this publisher contacted me. I'd never heard of New Holland Publishing at the time, and they contacted me and asked me if I knew any authors that might be interested in writing a book because they wanted to publish one. And I referred them to some of the authors that I know, like Heywood Nishioka, who's written many books, and Jean LaBelle and Hal Sharp, who are all here in the L.A. area. And, we went back and forth, and I don't know if they contacted them or what they did, but eventually they asked me to write the book instead. And I said, well, I guess I could do that. And then they sent me a contract and said, we need it in like 2 months or something. So I had to take off work, and just get to it and start writing and do the research. They said 40,000 words in 2 months. That's your job. I had to, provide, of course, an outline and, kind of go from there. And so it was a sudden kind of thing and a lot of work. And then, then there was an editor involved who we went back and forth, on editing different stuff. And then there was the trip to South Africa for the photos about 3 or 4 months later. And, of course, I'd never met any of those people who were going to be in the photos. And so I had to work with them, and actually the one thing that happened there was we figured we would start with the hardest, most difficult throws, like the big Uranages and the Katagromas, where the people land kind of hard, thinking that they'd be a little more fresh at the beginning of the week, And we would do a morning session and an afternoon session and an evening session, and to get these photos done in 1 week. And the photographer didn't use digital cameras, he used regular film, so we would send the film to the processor at the end of the day, and he'd get it in the afternoon the next day. So on Tuesday afternoon, we got the photos from the first day, and they were pretty much unusable because the lighting wasn't keeping up with the speed of the shot. So the first photo would be bright, and the second one would be a little darker, and the third one would be really dark. We had to pretty much throw those out and do it all, start over again, and that really wiped us out. By the end of the week, we were, everybody was dragging and not feeling too good anymore. And that's when we ended the week at the beach, though, so that was a little better. the last day, we filmed at the beach.
So that was really nice.
It was a great experience, though, and some of the throws I had to work with the people that I wanted to do it and get it just right, because it wasn't their favorite throw or whatever, but for the sake of variety, I wanted someone else to do the techniques. And then for the most part, they came out pretty good.
Good.
Then I had to review the photos, though. This is another funny thing. I had to review these little film strips, which were, these like 1-inch photos. And I had a little magnifying glass so I could look at the photo. And so the photos that were selected for the book were selected that way, looking at a little 1-inch version.
That's kind of an archaic process nowadays.
With a magnum. I spent, every afternoon, I'd spend hunched over a little table with a light box and a magnifying glass. And so that accounts for a few of the errors that I would have reshot a photo or something, but, I couldn't tell what was what.
Yeah. It's amazing that they didn't have that whole process digitally, process, but, done.
I was surprised.
I only had one other question, and that was, so you talked a little bit about what's next for you in the website, but how about you as just a judo sensei and a judo a judo player yourself. What are you looking forward to just in your own judo development? You know, what do you think you still, what do you feel like you want to learn next or want to do next on the mat itself?
Man, that's a good question. You know, most of the time lately I've been thinking about retiring, but I just don't have it in me, so I guess I'm not going to do that. And a couple years ago, just before I wrote the book, actually, I had my hip replaced, and a few months before that, I had knee surgery and had my ACL replaced. And that since then, it's slowed me down a lot. I've been more cautious, and so I've been doing less and less randori and practice on my own. And what I'd really like to do is to get over that and get back to where I can enjoy randori again. That's one of the things I love, and I just need to be able to do it with some sense that it'll be safe for me without injuring my artificial hip and stuff.
Right.
So for me, that's where it's at. Getting back, because it's been a couple of years now that I've been neglecting that for myself. I've been focusing on the teaching and everything else. And I've, got some good students that are coming that I enjoy, and coaching at tournaments and that kind of stuff. That I enjoy seeing them develop and get their black belts and that kind of stuff. But I'd also like to be able to actually get back into it myself a little bit more than I do now.
So what's your favorite throw?
I would say Horaigoshi.
Okay. And all right.
One other thing I have is, since I had my hip replaced, I now have a squeak in my hip.
Is it just audible to you, or can other people hear it?
No, everybody can hear it. So when I do Horaigoshi, it squeaks now. I'm getting over that too. Now I'm a little less self-conscious of it.
Does it squeak better when you do Horaigoshi just right, or does it matter?
It doesn't help that way. No. but it squeaks more when I do left sided Horaigoshi than when I do right sided Horaigoshi. So I'm doing more right sided stuff now.
are you more of a left handed player?
No, I'm actually more of a right-handed anyway, so that's okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all the questions I have.
Well,
how about you, Mike?
I'm done. I'm worn out. I flew all night last night and got here.
Yeah, we should mention that Mike's calling from Athens today.
Yeah, from Athens, and I fell asleep at the pool today because I got here and we thought, well, we'll go walk around and just walk it off and try to get to bed early tonight. Well, we were so tired, we just went out to the pool and fell asleep and got sunburned at the pool. So it's going to be interesting. So,
and for those of you who don't know, Mike is pretty fair-skinned, so he's probably pretty burnt.
Yeah, forgot my underwear once again, so I got to find somewhere tomorrow.
Okay, too much information.
Okay, too much information. But I definitely applaud you, Neil, for your site. I mean, I've been a major visitor for... Like I said, probably since about 1996, 1998, around there, and I think it's a great site. And, if you haven't been to, I mean, I'm sure you have, surely you have. If you haven't been to judoinfo.com, you got to go there. If you can do anything to help support it, anything you can donate monthly, please do so to keep that up. Because, I mean, I can't think that if your site was gone, I still go to it. Weekly. In fact, we did our last podcast. We were talking with Eric Hector, who's in Korea training. He's been there for 3 months, and I immediately went to pull up some information on Cho Young Chol and Ahn Byung Gan off your site of the old, world championships. So
we all need support, and there's so many people benefiting from what we're both doing that hopefully people will step up and do what they can to help. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Well,
thanks a lot, Neil.
Thank you.
It was great talking to you,
Olin Camp. And
thank you for having me.
Anytime we can help you out, please don't hesitate. And again, all you listeners, go to his website and support his site best you can.
And our sites too.
And our sites.
Our...
That's right. That's right.
Okay, Michael. I think it's just about time to bow out. This has been a great podcast, and This is Gene Shin in Charlottesville saying thank you to everybody for listening once again.
Gene, have a great week.
Okay, you too, Mike.
And it's time for me to bow out and tuck myself into bed from Athens, Greece. Mike Darter, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll look forward to next time.